Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Old Collective Just Like You podcast. We're Diana, Winxie, Simona, and Eden. As third culture kids, we were never taught about intimacy, relationships, and sex. That is precisely why we created the Old Collective.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. So nice to be on here.
Yes. Thank you for coming on. Can you introduce yourself to our guests and our listeners? Who is Sarah? And where you're from, where you studied, and anything you'd like to share.
Hi, everyone. And hi, Eden. Hi, Diana. I'm originally from Singapore, but I've lived in Hong Kong for over 15 years. So I guess this is home now. I guess I first studied human sexuality when I was in university in the States, and that was quite a while back now. But I would say that even before I became a sex coach or a sexologist, I'd educated people about sex for over a decade in various forms. I was an erotic blogger, so I wrote erotic stories. I was a sex researcher and writer for various publications. And then I ran a business selling sex toys to women through educational kind of workshops and events. So that's probably me professionally a little bit, and just my own personal story, and maybe what motivated me to get into this was I grew up very religious and very conservative. I describe my upbringing and how I grew up as I had severe good girl syndrome. So that was straight A's, went to church, led Bible study. And all of this resulted in a lot of guilt and shame when I first became sexually active. I had a very poor sex education. In fact, I had probably the opposite of a sex education. I had the fear-based, fear of God sex education, which said, don't do any sex because that's a sin. And that just made me completely unprepared and unprotected when I had my early sexual encounters. I made terrible choices in sexual partners. I would say I didn't really fully embrace my sexuality or enjoy sex until many years later. And all of this we can talk more about, but these are the things that kind of led me to pursue sex coaching, because I know firsthand how it's like to struggle with these things and the impact it made on me, on my confidence, on, you know, my self-esteem, and also on my relationships. So often it gives me a lot of empathy for my clients who come from a similar background.
I actually have a question. Mm-hmm. You mentioned you had bad sexual partners. In what way do you mean by that? Was it physically, emotionally, or both?
Well, I mean, I didn't have a lot of boundaries around sex when I was growing up. So I would say that I was just having sex because I thought that that's what my partners wanted. And so I just let it happen. And at that point of time, it wasn't about pleasure or anything. I felt like sex was being done to me. And so the way that I chose my partners, often they were, I would say, not very interested in my pleasure either. They were pretty inconsiderate lovers when I look back on it. They were essentially just using me for their pleasure. But it's not really to blame them as well, because at that point of time, I never really wanted sex for myself. I didn't really own my own sexuality. I didn't realize that until much later. Sex was just done to me and it was for somebody else.
That's so relatable. I think we've all been there, especially when we didn't know how to ask for what was suitable for us. And like you said, there's just such a lack of information out there that truly does help, I think, women in our community about those things.
I definitely felt like when I was younger and when I had less education, because the only information that I got was porn, I felt like I was performing more than I was receiving.
Yeah.
And I think now that being in the industry, understanding more about sex education, learning about how to communicate, I feel like it's definitely changed on how I perceive pleasure and how I communicate my needs. So Thank you for sharing a little bit more about your background. And I feel like there's a lot of commonalities that we have, especially growing up in Asian households. You grew up in Singapore. I grew up in Taiwan. Diana is Taiwanese American. So I feel like we have very similar backgrounds. And I'm sure in our family, the upbringing is somewhat very, very similar. You've also had some time to relearn what sex education is. Can you share a little bit about how you see your sexual self and intimate self now in three words?
It's very hard to summarize like three words. Okay, but my three words are authentic, adventurous, and empowered. Authentic, definitely, I really resonate with this whole idea of, you know, sex as a performance, because, and a lot of women experience that, especially if you've learned about sex through porn, which unfortunately is very common for a lot of people these days. It was a journey to really explore and know myself and what I liked. I think that's why authentic is probably in there as the first word. Adventurous is because I'm a kind of curious person. I love novelty. It's a turn on. I don't really like routine. I'm always kind of like looking to maybe push my boundaries a little bit. I like things that's kind of fun for me. And then empowered is definitely a journey. And you know, the thing is, I say empowered now, but 10 years down in my 50s, 60s, I don't know. I look back on me now and then I'll think, you thought you were empowered then? I think empowerment is like kind of like a lifelong journey for me. But I would say that in terms of my own sexual journey, I started becoming sexually active in my teens and no idea what I was doing. In my 20s, I was a little bit of a rebel. And I just really wanted to do everything sexually that I was kind of like taught not to do or told not to do. So I was very a bit like anti-establishment and rebellious in that way. Probably in my 30s, gained a lot more knowledge and confidence in my sexuality. That's probably when the decade where I first started to really like own my sexuality. Now in my 40s, I feel just much more empowered in terms of being able to ask for what I need, have good boundaries, no more people pleasing, no more fake orgasms, you know, all of that. And also it comes with being a coach, right? I think being able to empower others is also very empowering for me.
Do you think, from what you have shared for listeners out there, is there any way to skip all the steps and just become empowered? I'm very curious because I myself, I'm currently experiencing what you have experienced. Is there any way, any shortcut that anyone can take?
Firstly, getting a coach actually helps. I wished that I had a coach to help me in this kind of journey. But it, even if you don't have a coach, you can't afford one, or maybe you just don't have access to one, is to maybe just have a mentor. I think older women who have gone through similar journeys, gaining community from peers or people who are sex positive, who can share with you their experiences, can really help you along and can give you really great insights. I think also the other thing I would say is to be very conscious of where you are along that journey. And I think maybe when I was younger, you know, this concept of like mindfulness, and, you know, I didn't really get it. Like, I'm not a very mindful person. I was just sort of just doing the thing that I was doing. But I think what really helped was as I grew older and I started having my own sort of mindfulness practice, I started journaling, was really actually just asking myself with every sort of major sexual encounter or, you know, partner that was in my life, what is this experience teaching me? And what am I learning about myself? What am I learning about my sexuality from this experience? And I think that sort of consciousness and level of self-awareness really helps to sort of shortcut, fast track the journey. But often we don't really do that, right? We're just so busy exploring and just so going through life.
I feel like every phase of journey you've explained is what everyone does go through, but not a lot of people get the chance to be able to embrace and be like present and self-aware and kind of totally take it in as you have at this stage. I think that's the hard realization for people. Were there any ways for you when you were struggling or questioning yourself or feeling even kind of societal shame? How were you able to embrace all of those phases of yourself? And what kind of tips would you give young women out there about how to embrace that?
Maybe I should just talk a little bit about when I first started to really embrace my sexuality. As I mentioned, I was a bit of a rebel when I was younger, in my teens, early 20s. And that's when I really started to challenge everything and ask why. I gave a lot of grief to my parents, and definitely they had their whole Bible study group that was praying for me, because I realized that people who are religious, they don't like it when other people ask them why. Why are we doing this? Why do we believe this? And that's kind of when it started, probably in my teens. But then when I was in university in the US, that was probably the first milestone for my sexual awakening, I guess, because it was a very special time for me. I was away from my family, from Singapore, from my upbringing. And so that gave me, you know, certain newfound independence. I was able to like form my identity away from the pressures of my family and cultural upbringing. And there was also like lots of new stimulation and personal growth, right? It opened my eyes to the world. I made a lot of friends that I wouldn't have had ordinarily. Because when I grew up, I grew up in a sort of a very Christian school and with my church and everything. You know, I didn't actually even know I didn't have any gay friends, for example. I mean, I'm sure people were gay. They just weren't openly out because of the sort of repression that that they experienced, like in those environments. So of course, like when I went to the States and my university was in California. So I started to make my first gay friends, you know, and like these are all, you know, as like someone with a sheltered upbringing, this really helped to open my eyes to different people's expressions of their sexuality. I listened to their stories, and it helped me understand that sexuality was a spectrum and it's not something to be ashamed of. From there on, I always followed my curiosity. I sort of worked hard to really put myself in situations where maybe I was a little bit uncomfortable because I still had, you know, a little bit of sexual shame that I was brought up with, but I kept trying to sort of push myself out of my comfort zone and explore things sexually, talk to different people and be open-minded and be curious and not judgmental. That would be like my first tip. Or, you know, if you want to really embrace your sexuality, it's to follow your curiosity and try not to put, you know, the wall of judgment, maybe quite instinctive because that was the way that you brought up, but work hard to really try to get over that and to try to keep an open mind. And then the second thing that really helped me, and I think would be also a great tip for anybody who's looking to embrace their sexuality, is having a voice. So for me, that was writing and speaking about sex on my podcast and, you know, being really public with challenging all of the things that I was brought up and telling my story, right? But maybe not everybody has a podcast. That's okay. Not everybody has a blog. That's okay. But I think having a voice is important to whoever you have around you, to your community, to your peers, you know, being able to express yourself, express your thoughts about sexuality without shame is really important. And, you know, this sort of process of coming out, it doesn't have to just be for gay people. You know, it can be for everybody. Find your voice, tell your stories. In fact, often I felt like sometimes when I would tell my friends or tell on the podcast, the stories that made me most ashamed sometimes in the past and made me feel most vulnerable, those are actually the stories that often help others. And it helps others feel like they're not alone in their sexual journey, that they are normal. So having that voice, you know, and expressing yourself is also really important.
I love that. I feel like we have so many common grounds because the O Collective started as like a hump day dinner where we just spoke about, after a few drinks, we were always talking about sex. And we found out how much commonalities we have when it comes to bad sex. And we decided we wanted to make a change. And then we were daring each other to do exciting, curious things week on week. And that's how the O Collective was born. Actually, I'm very curious myself, like, what were these things you were opening yourself to? What were the experiences? Maybe you can give some listeners some tips on like, maybe like a direction or a nudge on things to explore that can help open their eyes?
It's going to be very different for everyone, right? So for me, I wanted to experience all the different sort of formats of kink, anything that was sort of anti-traditional, anti-missionary sex, non-normative sex, anything. And actually kink really is, you know, the definition of the word kink is really anything that's sort of like non-normative. But I guess for me, that was dabbling in, you know, BDSM, in sort of like going to play party, trying to do courses on tantric sexuality and so on, going to these like hedonist retreats. So look, I'm not recommending that for everyone. If you want to hear more of my personal stories, you can definitely listen to my podcast. There's lots to share. But I want to say that it's not about doing all of these things because not everybody's comfort zone is going to be the same. For someone who is very, very conservative, doing something outside their comfort zone is just trying a new position or putting on some lingerie. Everybody has different things that they can explore. And I'm not saying that you have to push yourself like so far to the point where you're really uncomfortable, but just sort of put yourself in situations where you feel like, okay, maybe, you know, you want to push a little bit, you want to just try and see to the point where it still feels safe to you. But yeah, you're curious, right? You have an open mind.
I actually had a question about that, like the exploring, the pushing your boundaries. Are there any flags or triggers that could be helpful for young women or young people in general, where it's kind of the opposite of pushing your boundary? Like, how do you know when your body's telling you that this is already making you feel super uncomfortable? Of course, that's like very self-awareness, but I feel like in a lot of situations, we aren't aware that it's a bad situation and like you've already crossed the boundary. I can share like a personal experience of mine where I was with a very new partner and he was incredibly aggressive, but because I was willing to explore and understand what kind of things that he liked to do, I actually ended up with bruises all over my face and my neck and my entire body. And I don't know if Eden remembers, but she was incredibly worried when I was doing this with him. It took a while, I think, before I was able to communicate and flag for myself, even just take a step back and think like, oh, this is actually not okay with me. And I need to like draw the line here and let him know. But is there any ways that in your experience with all of your patients, if there are certain things that you can already catch on earlier before it's too late?
Firstly, I'm very sorry that that happened to you. But I think also it's a very common experience for women to find themselves in situations sexually that they didn't initially sign up for. But firstly, the best way to prevent that is to always have a conversation before any kind of exploration with a partner that maybe is just slightly a bit more adventurous. So if you know that you want to try something that's going to be a little bit off the book, then having a conversation before is always really necessary. Telling them what you like is also really necessary and what you don't like. And often those conversations don't actually happen before, they happen after, right? And it usually happens too late. But I think it's really important that we have these conversations about sex the earlier the better, because it does help to prevent us sort of being in those situations. If you are already in that situation, of course, then that's definitely a very tricky one, because I think obviously having a safe word in place, you know, that's also really important. But let's say you don't have any of those things set up and you're already in that situation, then it becomes, how do you extricate yourself? And being able to say no is a really powerful thing. And it's something that I didn't learn till much later as well, because maybe I mentioned a little bit earlier, I was a bit of a people pleaser when I grew up. And sex was not for me, right? Sex was really for the other person. So, you know, I was just going along quite passively with what they wanted to do. However, I think realizing that you have a voice, you have a choice, you can say no, you know, all of those things are really important in the moment when things already start, you know, getting to the point where you actually have to extricate yourself. And that comes from being empowered as a woman.
Thank you. I think that's a really good tip. It's so hard in practice, you know. I think, like, for that person, he wasn't intentionally trying to hurt me or anything. And I never did not give him consent to stop. Mm-hmm. And I think it just takes so much experience and practice before you feel comfortable voicing that even to, mm-hmm. to yourself, actually. So it's yeah. Very tough. And it's a lot of like self-growth and journey and confidence, self-confidence to be able to communicate that way.
Also, I mean, things like obviously picking your partners carefully, mm-hmm. making sure it's somebody you trust before, you know, embarking on any of these kind of activities is really important. And then also making sure you're checking in, right? Anytime, you know, you're doing some kind of exploration that feels like new territory, then every stage, how are you feeling? Is this okay? Like, you have to double down on the checking in. Just keep checking in with each other. And sometimes you also have to prompt the check-in, you know? You have to ask the question as well. And you have to be an active and empowered participant as well, as opposed mm-hmm. to just sort of a passive passenger that's going along for the ride.
Yeah, that's a great tip. Consistently checking in is very, mm-hmm. very key. Knowing your story is actually very similar to the four of us founders. We're also corporate. Most of us work in marketing and strategy, and we've also transitioned. So we wanted to hear from you, like, what made you or what inspired you to fully commit to doing what you're doing now? Because it's such a bold step, and it took the four of us a while to be confident in ourselves and walk away from the corporate rat race and be like, this is the thing that we really want to do and we are the most passionate about.
I identify with that, and I am also on the ride with you, and it feels scary and challenging to me every single day, actually. I was always passionate about sex education because I never really had one. I really followed that. And the thing is, there were sort of push and pull factors for me, right? The push factor was really that I was laid off from my corporate job in 2017. And that was really like a turning point for me. It kind of sparked like a mini midlife crisis where I had to ask myself what really made me happy and what my purpose was in life. You know, was it staying in my comfort zone and getting a steady paycheck, but also being very bored and helping big companies make more money by selling people things that they didn't really need? I had to check in with myself. Or, you know, what really made me feel fulfilled and happy? And I think I got to the point where I felt like what really would make me feel happy was helping people. and helping others. That's why I created my platform, you know, Sarah Sense. And then my podcast, Better in Bed, was actually already running before I got laid off. I was actually just doing that as like a passion project. But I was already getting such great feedback from it that gave me such a buzz. Like whenever I heard from people who were, you know, touched in some way by the podcast, either they learned something or resonated with them. And I just realized that I never really got that same buzz from my corporate career. And so ultimately what I felt was, when I started studying for my coaching certificate, and then I started coaching, I realized that, you know, this was a real opportunity that I could just help and I could make a difference and I could literally make people's lives better in some way. You know, having a happier and healthier sex life is actually making life better for people. And I think that sense of overall purpose has always, always driven me.
I just wanted to know, are your parents and church still praying for you? are they supportive now?
They are much more supportive than they used to, but don't forget, I worked on them for many, many years now. And I think, you know, funnily enough, okay, so this is going to be a very Asian thing. And if any sort of Asian people that are listening to this podcast, that might relate. So one of the turning points for my parents, so I told them I was going to be a sex coach and told them I was working with clients. And they're kind of like, okay, maybe sort of okay, like acknowledgement, but the less we know, the better. Then what was the turning point for them was when a lot of my work started being featured in SCMP, like media, like mainstream media, like the South China Morning Post, like Tatler. And, you know, it started getting picked up by these publications. And then I would send my parents publications and I would say, hey, mom, just so you know, this is what I'm doing. And I think it gave them a much greater appreciation, firstly, for what I was doing. But I think it helped to legitimize what I was doing as well. And I think, you know, with Asian parents, they want to have a story to tell, really. They want to be proud of you. They just need to be given a story. So they're like, yeah, you know, my daughter is in the SCMP. And yeah, you know, but she's a sex coach. And this is a little bit sort of the additional bit. I mean, you know, I think being picked up by a lot of the media, you know, it just helped them gain credit. I think it just helped gain credibility because they're just kind of a little bit like Asian parents.
Totally. I think that's so relatable to our parents as well.
100%. I want to say it's the same as my mom. My mom was 100% supportive from the beginning, but definitely having the press and being legitimized. Like, you know how Asian parents are, like they're at dinner tables. They're talking about, oh, my son's a doctor. My daughter's a lawyer. My son's a diplomat. My mom would be like, my daughter sells sex toys. Now she's actually so proud to talk about it because she likes to get reaction from people. And now it's like, you know how we spoke about people need to talk about it to invoke other people's curiosity. I think because of her trying to show off her daughter's occupation now, it also sparked her friends' curiosity. They would message me on the side now and ask me about how to use a vibrator, how to get started. So in a way, I think it trickles down to like different, I would say, target audiences, even within the parents' crowd.
Amazing. Amazing. And, you know, that's sort of like, I mean, I love that because the thing is, you know, you're also changing them and you're influencing them, right? And you're bringing them up to speed in ways about the world and how the world is changing and how the world is viewing, how attitudes towards sex is changing. And I mean, I love my parents as well. I've actually, you know, I never have actually any ill will about the way I was brought up, actually. I just feel like they're just doing the best that they could, you know, at the time. They've mellowed out a lot as well. And I think that, you know, through my work now, they've also come around to understand, oh, okay, so this is what, you know, young people think about about sex and sexuality and so on. And you know, like nowadays they'll be like, oh, you know, there's a gay pastor now, you know, that we go to a church with a gay pastor now. So I was like, okay, this progress, right?
Yeah, amazing. For my dad, he really leaned on the sex education part of what we do. And he feels like so proud of that because he thinks it's so important for us as women, Asian women, especially, to be sharing that amongst like bigger groups of people. He also recognized that, you know, we weren't just like crazy kinky girls or like, you know, going out to fill that like assumption of what people think we are doing. He started reading our articles and he just felt like there's such a big gap, and he is proud of us from that angle. I don't know about how he feels about us selling sex toys particularly. I think it's baby steps, progression. And we actually shared an article recently about fertilization, because one of our friends who was also at our old company decided to freeze her eggs. And after reading it, he called me right away and said, oh, when you come back to Taiwan, let's get you tested and let's get you checked out. It's so important at your age, like you need to check in. So I felt like, oh, okay, they're really paying attention to us and they're not trying to be ignorant parents. Like you said, everybody just was doing their best in the situations that they were in, and it's never too late for them to be more open and discover new things or what people are doing now to better protect themselves or take care of themselves. So there's potential, there's hope. I think it just makes you feel like there's hope. And I wanted to follow up on that, is that since you've started to now, have you seen bigger progress in terms of this topic? Have you felt it? Or do you feel like there's still a lot of struggle with it?
I think that there is still a big challenge, but I do think that there are a lot more platforms that we can reach people these days, like through social media and so on. And so people are actually probably more open than ever before, I think, to educational information. You know, we have podcasts now, like in rad podcasts, like, you know, sex, about sex growing up. You know, I didn't even watch YouTube that much. You know, there's a lot more channels. I feel people can get good sex ed information these days. But I guess the caveat to that as well is that sometimes there's also a proliferation of information, right? We're so oversaturated with content, and often we don't really know what is, you know, what is good sex ed and what is not good sex ed, you know? And there's lots of people who are Googling. They just Google, you know, they just Google questions like, you know, why is my dick not hard or something? And you get so many different responses. So I still think that if anything, there's a lot of work to be done.
And also, like, being in Asia, I'm very curious, like therapy, I would say, or like life coaching, I would say still a niche. How are people perceiving sex education? Do you see a rise in people looking for sex ed throughout the last few years? Or do you still see that there's still a taboo in, you know, speaking to a sex educator or a sex coach?
You know, I think that it's something that maybe it's not top of mind. I do think that whenever I hold a workshop, whenever the information is there, people are so hungry for that information. But you're right in that, you know, there's the taboos of our society in Asia. It may be that people are still, they wouldn't maybe seek it out necessarily by themselves. They may not place a priority in terms of the importance of it. But I know that when it is there, people are super hungry for it. And I also know that when there is a problem with their sex lives, you know, often people are searching. They're searching for information, but they don't really know what's the best place to get it.
From the people you see, of course, not disclosing names and stuff, what do you think is the biggest problem that you're currently seeing in your clients right now?
I think one of the most general themes is that a lot of people have unrealistic expectations around sex. That is contributed to by the media, by social media, by mainstream porn, which has really become increasingly prevalent over the past decade. And often, because we have no sex education or little sex education, it becomes the substitute, right, for sex education. And so what happens is that creates a whole bunch of myths and misconceptions around sex for people. And you know, for women, it's about every woman loves to have penetrative sex. You know, every woman has a hairless body. All the vulvas look the same. They always have loud orgasms. That's what they feel orgasms look like. For men, you know, men, it's always, the dicks are always hard. They always last for a very long time. Sex always lasts for a long time. What happens is that when these unrealistic expectations are created, when people realize their own personal experience doesn't match up to what they see as the kind of ideal, then they start to feel pressure. They start to feel like a failure. There's a lot of performance anxiety. It works across all genders. Performance anxiety, like clients that I work with, our men, you know, performance anxiety is, you know, usually around erections. It's usually around sort of ejaculation coming too soon, you know, not coming at all. And it's because they view sex as a performance, right? And for women, that performance pressure is also interpreted as, oh, I need to, you know, always have an orgasm from penetration to always feel like I'm in the mood. These are all sort of very unrealistic expectations. Everybody is different. And everyone has different likes and dislikes, you know, when it comes to sex. No one ideal for sex, right? However, often what we see on porn and the media, there is a mainstream ideal. So that often causes a lot of problems.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that, even just with personal experience. When I was young, if I see a guy who is not immediately hard, I'm like, oh, he doesn't like me.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, wow, everything takes time. A guy's like, a man's the same as a woman. We all need time to feel turned on, whether it's like mentally or physically, or like also taking into consideration whatever that's happening that day. Just as a question, do you have like a first, like 1, 2, 3 step approach to be like, hey, if you have these unrealistic expectations of yourself and your partner, here's the 3 steps that you can take to maybe kickstart the journey?
I don't know if I have 3 steps, but I have 1 overall step. And that is about redefining what sex means to you and taking a broader view of sex. So people think sex is only about intercourse. You know, it's only about genitals. It's only good if there's orgasms that are involved. So it's measured by orgasms. And this makes sex very goal-oriented. So the really the biggest piece of advice is to try to broaden that view and not let sex become so goal-oriented, because when sex is goal-oriented, it becomes a kind of performance. People try to go through a script, like first act, second act, third act. First we make out, then there's sort of grabbing of the boob, grabbing of the genitals, then there's intercourse, then there's orgasm, then we all go to sleep. Like, start to feel like there's something wrong, or there's a failure if somewhere along those steps that they're not happening, it's not followed, there's no orgasm, maybe there's no intercourse. You know, when you take a broader view of what sex is, then you start to understand that actually sex really includes all of the intimate activities that connect you and your partner. And that could be kissing, it could be looking into each other's eyes, it could be oral sex, it could be using a toy on each other, right? It involves a whole body experience. It's as much your mind, not even as much, more your mind than your body even. They have to work in totality. This whole menu of pleasure you explore, you know, in sex, these activities can occur in whatever order you feel like doing them in. It's whatever just feels good. Intimacy goes beyond just intercourse. And sex really shouldn't just be goal-oriented. It's about pleasure, you know, and should be pleasure-oriented.
That's such a great way to sum it up. I think that when you're brought up in more conservative cultures, not just Asian for that matter, sex becomes a really task thing because mm-hmm. it's for you to procreate and that's about it. But we've seen these conservative cultures even more have women that are seeking and looking for something different, because when it becomes like this task or the goal thing that you have to achieve, I feel like you lose a lot of sense of yourself and your ownership mm-hmm. of your own body, actually. Because it's just there to serve as, you know, baby maker or for him or her, that other partner. And then you forget yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a chore, right?
Yeah.
Sex shouldn't be exactly. a chore.
It's such a natural thing that has been given to all of us. And we, over the years, just have forgotten how to embrace it. And I think that's like why we are all here today, is we've recognized that these things do help us and are beneficial for us in the long term for our health or wellness or even a peace of mind. It's kind of like we're going backwards, like we're trying to go back to very bare minimum and basics of not having media or religion for that matter, or conservative values hold us back or feel that shame. That being said, knowing what you know now, mm-hmm. if you could give advice to your younger self or young women here now, what would it be?
Great question. It was pretty sheltered. I guess like I felt a lot of shame, but I guess like what I would say is always be curious and to don't be afraid to challenge things, because ultimately it's an empowering thing to be able to decide for yourself what you believe in and what feels true to you. I guess as somebody who's been a product of a very conservative upbringing, it's really important to realize that these values that we were brought up with, they don't have to be the values that you have today and that you have in 10 years' time. And I know that sounds kind of obvious, but the thing is that sometimes a lot of us just operate on these very subconscious level, right? We have these values that we were brought up with, but we don't question them. We don't challenge them. We don't do the work, right? So they just kind of operate sort of subconscious level. You don't really know why you're doing the things that you're doing. You just never initiate sex. You know, why don't you initiate sex? You just never do. But I think doing the work is actually really to challenge yourself and sit down and investigate, why do you never initiate sex? Why do you never say something when sex doesn't feel good? Why don't you advocate for yourself? I think being able to challenge all of that, challenge the things that you were brought up with, that's kind of the advice that I would give to myself. You know, sit down and really have that awareness and that knowledge and even that confidence to ask yourself, what am I really about? What do I really believe?
I love that. So to sum things up, you meant one, to be curious, explore things, and then also to challenge yourself, like challenge your beliefs, challenge your upbringing, and not to just be content with the current state or whichever state that you're currently in. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing your insight. And if people want to follow you or have any questions for Sarah, what's the best way to reach out to you or follow your work?
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much. I had a really brilliant time, you know, having this conversation with you. If you want to follow me, you can do so at Hello Sarah Sense on Instagram. My platform is sarahsense.com, and I would love it if, you know, you joined my email community, because that's where I give a lot of tips to people who are within my email community. And, you know, there's usually a lot of interaction there. And also check out the Better in Bed podcast.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.